When we think about the history of media in America, it's easy to think of it in terms of technology, from the rise of newspapers to radio to television to the internet and beyond. Or you could look at media as a vehicle for reflecting or even contributing to social change, from colonial-era newspapers encouraging the American Revolution to TV cameras bringing the civil rights movement into 1960s-era living rooms. There are lots of ways to examine media in America. Joseph Torres, along with co-author Juan Gonzalez, recently placed the history of media under a different sort of prism, that of race. In their book, News for All the People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media, Torres and Gonzalez explore how America's racial divisions have played a major role in the development of our media system. Joseph Torres joins us now. Joe, welcome to the Afternoon Magazine.
Hey, thanks for having me, Craig. Really appreciate it.
Glad to have you with us. In what ways has race influenced our system of media in America?
Well, I mean, from the very beginning, race has been a central focus of our media system. But when we talk about news coverage, for sure, from the very first newspapers printed in, very first newspaper in our country was in 1690 in the Massachusetts colonies. To the Boston Newsletter, the first continuous paper in the United States in the early 1700s, race has always been a central factor in the discussion of public discourse. When we talk about the actual creation of our media system, the first really media system in our country was in newspapers, and ironically about that. The, as we talk about in the book, the newspaper system was created as a result of a postal policy that subsidized the delivery of news. And ironically, it was during this period that people of color were able to actually create their own media system because the postal system was a decentralized media system. But what happened with what happened since then, though, is that government has made decisions. Whenever technology comes along, it fundamentally changes the media system. And since then, government has been turning over control of media to the hands of a few, and as a result, large media corporations have been controlling the media, and as a result, we get to continue the kind of racist coverage that we talk about throughout the book, and the lack of people of color voices in the media system itself.
I want to get back to that point in just a couple of minutes, but first of all, let's sort of create a little context here. There have been a lot of institutions in America's past that have been examined in history books through the prism of race. Schools, restaurants, music, baseball, all, of course, were at one time segregated. And I guess you'd say the same was true for media, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's always been that case. You know, our first ethnic newspapers were created in the 1800s. 1827 was the first African-American newspaper. There's always been a thriving ethnic press, but very few people to this day. There's a tons of Spanish-language media in this country and ethnic media, but very few people have historically have knowledge of an existence of a vibrant ethnic press. When it comes to the mainstream media, the English-language-dominant media, it's not really until the late 1960s, 1970s in our country where we first started to see the first wave of journalists of color entering the newsrooms in any significant numbers. It's been a real segregated media system until the 1960s and 70s. And if you look at figures today, the number of journalists of color, for instance, working in newspapers is at its lowest level now in two decades. So it's actually trending backwards because of all the consolidation and all the, we live in a transformative time and the industry is in flux trying to figure out its new business model. As a result, we're seeing a lot of journalists getting laid off. And because journalists of color are normally the last hire, first fire, we see an actual reduction in the number of journalists of color. So we're seeing even wider newsrooms, a lack of a better word, because of the current economic crisis in the media industry.
So are you saying you see a link between media consolidation where fewer companies own more newspapers, radio, TV stations, so as a result there are they in an effort to consolidate services, they lay people off, and that happens predominantly more often for minorities? Is that
well? What happens when you have consolidation? As you're saying, you have to pay back the banks. You take on all this debt, and what do? You start the companies you take over. You start laying off workers, and you reduce your news staff. And there's a de-investment is happening in news. And because people of color were the last to get into the system, the newer hires. Because through the past 40 years, there's been a slow integration of our nation's newsrooms, they're likely the first fired or laid off. And then when it comes to, you know, to me, the ultimate goal of the ultimate job promotion in a newsroom is to actually be the owner. And when it comes to that, we have very few television stations and radio stations in this country owned by women or people of color. There's only 3% of all TV stations, full-power TV stations, owned by people of color, and 8% of radio stations. And it's become harder to purchase these stations because of consolidation. Consolidation raises the price of these stations. And because of the lack of economic wealth people of color historically has, it makes it real unaffordable for a person of color to own a broadcast station. Consolidation makes it even harder.
I think there's long been this perception that journalists are generally motivated by their role as watchdogs, with a desire to bring injustice to light, to provide a mirror to society, and so have long sought to serve the interests of minority populations that may, you know, face a more powerful majority. In examining the history of race and the media, looking back to, you know, going back as far as you do to the 1700s, 1800s, have you found that to be a sort of false assumption that's sort of become ingrained in our thoughts?
Absolutely. You know, I think that for people of color, you ask people of color today, I know most people are not very trustworthy of the media and have a disdain for, let's say, the mainstream media. More folks trust public media than they do the mainstream media. But when you talk to people of color, there's even greater disdain for the media system. I mean, we talk about it in the book, in which the early colonial newspapers, I mean, they were demonizing, dehumanizing people of color in order to help it working hand in hand with government in support of government policies that supported the removal of Native Americans from their ancestral lands, or territorial expansion of our country into the Southwest and taking over lands that once belonged to Mexico. The institution of slavery, racist government policies were supported by mainstream media outlets. They helped to work hand in hand. You cannot divorce the role media played in propping up or supporting these racist policies. So, for instance, we're talking about, I already mentioned it, that the first continuous newspaper in this country was the Boston Newsletter that was created in the early 1700s. And in that, and we quote the paper that they talked about blacks being addicted to stealing a lion. If you look now, last year, there was a study in the Pittsburgh media market that showed that the dominant image of coverage of African Americans in the Pittsburgh media market is of crime. It's of crime and sports figures. And so here we are all this later. What is the dominant image that people have of people of color still? Look at the Latino community. What is the dominant image you have of Latinos in this country? Is undocumented immigrants, of people who are problem people or some sort of threat to society, to the fabric of society. That's how people of color were covered back in the early colonial newspapers, and to this day, unfortunately, it's still a dominant image in how people of color are covered as problem people who are a threat to the fabric of society.
So then how can mainstream media today better reflect all the people? What could be done to make media today more inclusive?
Well, I mean, I think I think we definitely need much more public media, public media that is not profit driven. The profit driven media has so many structural issues with it. The fact that the media owners have placed profit over news gathering, right? And the fact they see the investment in news, in local news. I mean, you see this whole thing with the Chicago Tribune and the Houston Chronicle, this latest story that has been breaking over the past few weeks where they're actually outsourcing local news. So we need a stronger media, more vibrant media system, which I think public media is part of the answer. Having a much more vibrant, stronger, a financially supported public media system in which you have real news reporting going on that's not profit-driven. And then, of course, it comes to policies. You know, I mean, the reason we have the unjust media system that we have today is because of government decisions that places control of media in the hands of a few companies, whether it was the radio or whether it was cable television. That's always been the case, and The future of the media is the internet, right? In which is being content is being distributed online, and anyone can create their own online voice. We have to make sure the internet remains an open media platform, so the diverse voices that are already that you can find on the internet these days continue to thrive. How do we financially support this new model of online media? It's what we're all struggling with, but we have to preserve the open internet as a free and open space where allow robust voices to be able to speak freely.
Joe Torres is Senior External Affairs Director of the media reform organization Free Press and co-author of the book News for All the People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media. He'll speak about the history and future of community radio at this week's Grassroots Radio Conference here in Champaign-Urbana. Joe Torres, thanks so much for talking with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.